CD 6.
It was still dark when Dill, the master embalmer, woke up, his body twanging with the sensation that something was wrong. He slipped out of bed, dressed hurriedly, and pulled aside the curtain that did duty as a door. The night was soft and velvety. Behind the chirrup of insects, there was another sound, a frying noise, a faint sizzling on the edge of hearing. Perhaps that was what had woken him up. The air was warm and damp. Curls of mist rose from the river, and the pyramids weren't flaring. He'd grown up in this house. It had been in the family of the master embalmers for thousands of years, and he'd seen the pyramids flare so often that he didn't notice them, any more than he noticed his own breathing. But now they were dark and silent, and the silence cried out and the darkness glared. But that wasn't the worst part. As his horrified eyes stared up at the empty sky over the necropolis, they saw the stars and what the stars were stuck to. Dill was terrified. And then, when he had time to think about it, he was ashamed of himself. After all, he thought, it's what I've always been told is there. It stands to reason. I'm just seeing it properly for the first time. There. Does that make me feel any better? No. He turned and ran down the street, sandals flapping, until he reached the house that held Gurn and his numerous family. He dragged the protesting apprentice from the communal sleeping mat and pulled him into the street, turned his face to the sky and hissed, "Tell me what you can see." Gurn squinted.
"I can see the stars, master," he said.
"What are they on, boy?" Gurn relaxed slightly.
"That's easy, master. Everyone knows the stars are on the body of the goddess Nept, who arches herself from... Oh, bloody hell!"
"You can see her too?"
"Oh, mummy!"
whispered Gurn and slid to his knees. Dill nodded. He was a religious man. It was a great comfort knowing that the gods were there. It was knowing they were here. That was the terrible part. Because the body of a woman arched over the heavens, faintly blue, faintly shadowy in the light of the watery stars. She was enormous. Her statistics interstellar. The shadow between her galactic breasts was a dark nebula, the curve of her stomach a vast wash of glowing gas, her navel the seething dark incandescence in which new stars were being born. She wasn't supporting the sky, she was the sky. Her huge, sad face, upside down on the turnwise horizon, stared directly at Dill. And Dill was realizing that there are few things that so shake belief as seeing, clearly and precisely, the object of that belief. Seeing, contrary to popular wisdom, isn't believing. It's where belief stops, because it isn't needed anymore.
"Oh, sod," moaned Gurn.
Dill struck him across the arm. "Stop that," he said, "and come with me."
"Oh, master! Whatever shall we do?"
Dill looked around the sleeping city. He hadn't the faintest idea.
"We'll go to the palace," he said firmly. "It's probably a trick of the dark. Anyway, the sun will be up presently."
He strode off, wishing he could change places with Gurn and show just a hint of gibbering terror. The apprentice followed him at a sort of galloping creep.
"I can see the shadows against the stars, master. Can you see them, master? Around the edge of the world, master?"
"Just mists, boy," said Dill, resolutely keeping his eyes fixed in front of him and maintaining a dignified posture, as appropriate to the keeper of the left-hand door of the Natron Lodge and holder of several medals for needlework.
"There," he said. "See, Gurn, the sun is coming up." They stood and watched it. Then Gurn whimpered very quietly. Rising up the sky very slowly was a great flaming ball, and it was being pushed by a dung beetle bigger than worlds. Book 3, The Book of the New Sun. The sun rose, and because this wasn't the old kingdom out here, it was a mere ball of flaming gas. The purple night of the high desert evaporated under its blow-lamp glare. Lizards scuttled into cracks in the rocks. Ubastard settled himself down in the sparse shadow of what was left of the cephasia bushes, peered haughtily at the landscape, and began to chew cud and calculate square roots in base 7. Tepic and Petracci eventually found the shade of a limestone overhang and sat glumly staring out at the waves of heat wobbling off the rocks.
"I don't understand," said Petracci. "Have you looked everywhere?"
"It's a country. It can't just bloody..."